Welcome to Ishir on Lakuta Sichas, Volume 11, the first Sicha on Parshas Tetzaveh. So this Sicha, which we're going to be learning today, which will be on the first Rashi of the Parsha, it is what is known as a Rashi Sicha. It's a specific genre of the Rebbe's talks, and this began in 1964, on the 6th of Tishrei, between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur of 1964, the Rebbe's mother, Rebbe Simchana, passed away. And in honor of his mother, at that point, the Rebbe began a new custom, which is that every Farbringen, which was on a Shabbos, the Rebbe would discuss one of the Rashis in that week's Torah portion. And the Rebbe developed a whole unique way of learning Rashi, of understanding Rashi. The Rebbe developed hundreds of guidelines on how to properly learn and understand Rashi. And this continued for around 25 years. So there are many, many such sichas. And just as an aside, this itself is quite remarkable. You have to realize that the Rebbe at this time was close to 65 years old and had been teaching Torah for many, many years and giving farbringens and talking many different elements of Torah. And at this point in life, the Rebbe was like, okay, I'm not just going to speak another sicha or another mimer in honor of my mother, but to develop an entirely new way of understanding, a whole new derech and limud, as they say, a whole new path in learning Torah and Rashi, that itself is quite remarkable. And the Rebbe based himself on the rule which Rashi himself said many times, and Rashi states it many times, v'ani le'basi ela lefarish pshutei shel mikra, which means Rashi says that I am coming only to explain the simplest understanding of the verse, the simplest understanding of the Torah. So Rashi is not there to give us extra information, additional information. He's not there to give us what the Gemara says or what the Medrash says. Rashi is there to simply, when something isn't understood, to be able to, in the Chumash, in the text of the Chumash, Rashi is there to clarify. Now, the Rebbe's style and how the Rebbe analyzed Rashi itself is quite remarkable and unique. The Rebbe typically would take a Rashi, and the Rebbe would ask on the Rashi multiple questions. Sometimes you can have 20 questions that the Rebbe will ask on a Rashi in a Sicha. And again, based on these rules that Rashi himself said, that Rashi is only coming to explain Pshutei Shel Mikra, the simplest meaning of the Pasuk. And to be honest, sometimes that after you're learning a sicha and you see the first 5 questions, 10 questions, 15 questions, and you're wondering, this Rashi now looks like Humpty Dumpty that took a fall, and you're wondering, how in the world is the Rebbe going to put everything back together and make sense out of it all? And invariably what the Rebbe does is, instead of going and answering these questions individually, the Rebbe will give us one new understanding, one fresh understanding, and based on that, all the different questions automatically fall away. In other words, all these questions were based on a misperception. We weren't understanding what exactly Rashi was addressing, what he was trying to say. All we need is one paradigm shift, and suddenly everything becomes clear. And that's a unique characteristic of the Rebbe's Rashi Sichas, which makes them so fascinating. And again, the way the Rebbe analyzed the Rashi is unique. Most people, we learn Rashi, and Rashi is considered to be, a simple level of learning. When children go to school and they learn Chumash in the beginning, so they learn Rashi with it. And this idea of treating Rashi very, very seriously and examining every single word and every single letter and questioning and wondering about the different premises of Rashi is unique to the Rebbe. It's a very fascinating genre of study. And that's what we're going to be learning today, one of these Rashi Sichas. Now, another interesting aspect of the Rebbe Sichas is that, yes, the Rebbe will take a Rashi and the Rebbe will try to analyze it according to the Pshat level. In other words, try to understand what is Rashi trying to tell us in terms of the simple literal understanding of the Pasuk. However, the Rebbe also turned to, there were some great people who said that there's actually also a lot of hidden secrets in Rashi. The Levush, for example, Reb Mordechai Yaffe, one of the commentators on Rashi, he wrote in Parshas Bereishis, the Levush writes that kol hadvarim shebepirush Rashi yesh behem nigla v'nistar u'shneim emes. Everything in Rashi, there is the revealed understanding of what Rashi is trying to say, But Rashi also includes that which is nistar, that which is hidden from the Kabbalistic elements and the esoteric elements of Torah, and both of them are true. And the Chida also, the famous Sephardic sage, the Chida, he also wrote in his Sefer Shem HaGedolim, he wrote, Nira Sherashi Kasav Pirushei Alpi Hasoid. It is apparent that Rashi wrote his commentary based on the Kabbalah, V'yesh B'dvarav Razin Iloin, and in Rashi's words, there are supernal secrets to be found. And the Alter Rebbe also echoes this when the Alter Rebbe said that Rashi on Chumash is Yeina Shel Torah, is the wine of Torah. We know that wine is a metaphor for the deeper secrets of Torah. Just like wine is hidden in the grape until it has to be squeezed out, the same thing is the deeper secrets of Torah are like the wine, the rich wine which has to be squeezed out of Torah. But the Rebbe would often say that in order to be able to reveal the deeper secrets of the Torah, which are in Rashi, the very first thing that we have to do is understand Rashi on its simplest level. So we have to analyze, we have to probe the Rashi. And once we understand what Rashi is saying on the simplest level, then we can understand the secrets that are hidden in Rashi. And the Rebbe also said that in Rashi, there's also, the Rebbe quotes the Shalah, there's inyanim muflaim in Rashi, which means there are wondrous things in Rashi, which the Rebbe took to understand. There's also halachic understandings that emerge from Rashi. So in a standard Rashi sicha, the Rebbe will analyze the Rashi in its simplest level, try to make sense of what Rashi is trying to do in what we call pshutei shel mikra, the simple level of Torah, what's called pshat. And then usually the Rebbe will also extract the halacha from this Rashi, which halacha is Rashi trying to convey in this Rashi, and also to understand the Kabbalistic meaning behind this Rashi, which is also a somewhat standard element in the Rebbe's teachings, this idea of Torah Achas, that although Torah contains many levels, you have Pshat, Remez, Drush, and Soid, you have different levels of Torah, but ultimately they all constitute and comprise one Torah, and everything is connected one with another. All the different levels of Torah are connected. So here we have Rashi, which is known as Pshat, which is the simplest understandings of the Torah, but the Rebbe shows how in Rashi also you have many of the other levels of Torah. Okay, so after this brief introduction to what a Rashi Sicha is all about, let's actually get a taste of what a Rashi Sicha is, and we will be learning this Rashi Sicha. So if you look at the handout, text 1a, so we start off with the first pasuk in this week's Parsham, V'yata tetzavez b'nei Yisrael, v'yikro elecha shemen zayi zoch kosis lamoyer lahalis ner tamid. Translation, and you shall command, you as in Moshe, this is Hashem telling Moshe, you shall command the children of Israel, and they shall take to you pure olive oil, crushed for lighting, to kindle the lamps continually. So Rashi on this, in text 1b, so Rashi cites the words, Va'ata titzave zach, and you shall command pure. Those are words in the pasuk. Although they're not consecutive words in the pasuk, but those are from the first words in the pasuk, and then a word in the middle of the pasuk. And Rashi says, we'll do this in the English, text 1b, without sediment, as we learned in Menachos and the Gemara and tractate Menachos, he allows it to ripen at the top of the olive tree, etc. Okay, so Rashi is explaining over here, when the pasuk says that we shall take pure olive oil, what does it mean, pure olive oil? So Rashi is explaining it means without sediment, what's called in Hebrew shmarim. As we learned in Menachos, that we allow the olives to ripen, the olives that were used. This is, we're talking about the olives that were used for olive oil, which were then used for the menorah lighting. And they were allowed to ripen at the top of the olive tree. Okay, seems like a pretty innocent Rashi. But as is the Rebbe's habit, the Rebbe takes it apart, as we mentioned earlier. And we are going to do discuss a few of the questions that the Rebbe asks on this Rashi, although due to time constraints and also so our heads shouldn't be completely spinning, we're not going to give over all the questions, but we will give over a few of the questions on this Rashi. So the first question the Rebbe asks is, what is the question over here? A cardinal rule in Rashi, as we mentioned earlier, Rashi is there for Pshutei Shel Mikra, for the simple understanding of the Pasuk, which means that Rashi only will comment if there is something which is not understood, if there's something which isn't obvious in the simple, you know, you read the Pasuk and there's something, there's a question that arises. So therefore, Rashi discusses the question. Every Rashi, here's a rule of thumb, every Rashi is addressing a question. However, Rashi doesn't write the question. Rashi automatically skips straight to the answer. In fact, in the rare occasion when Rashi does ask the question, so then the Rebbe will ask, why did Rashi ask the question? After all, Rashi's style is to go straight to the answer. So the question over here is, what is bothering us when we look at this pasuk? Again, the pasuk is, you shall command the children of Israel, they shall take to you pure olive oil crushed for lighting to kindle the lamps continually. What's not understood? Which part don't we understand? You know, we all go to the store and we buy pure olive oil, extra virgin olive oil, and no one asks, what does it mean that it's pure? What does it mean extra virgin? We always understand that there's something that whatever substance it may be may have impurities in it, and therefore the Torah is telling us that the oil that is to be used for the menorah has to be pure. Why does Rashi even have to comment in the first place? Question number one. Question number two. So what does Rashi say? Pure means without sediment. Again, what's Rashi adding over here? Well, pure means pure. Pure means that the olive oil is pure and there's nothing in it. So why do we have to add without sediment? If it's pure, obviously it doesn't have sediment. Question number three. So Rashi says it is without sediment. And for some reason, Rashi decides to bring a proof from the Gemara, which also is uncharacteristic of Rashi. And what is the proof? How do we prove that pure means without sediment? Because the Gemara says he allows it to ripen at the top of the olive tree. Now, something here doesn't add up. How does the fact that the Gemara says, actually it's the Mishnah, the fact that the Mishnah says he allows it to ripen at the top of the olive tree, how does that indicate that it means without sediment? Now, the truth is, if you look at the Mishnah over there in Menachos, the Mishnah continues and says that you press the olives to get the oil out, as opposed to, there are two ways to get olive oil. You can press the olive or you can grind the olive. If you press the olive, then you don't have sediment. If you grind it, then you get the sediment. So the fact that the Mishnah afterwards says that you press the olive, that indicates that there were no sediment. But Rashi doesn't bring down those words. He only alludes to those words with etc. In the Hebrew, it's v'chulu. So Rashi brings down words which are seemingly irrelevant. Again, Rashi is trying to prove over here that pure means without sediment, and he brings proof from the words, he allows it to ripen at the top of the olive tree, which seemingly is irrelevant to what Rashi is saying. Okay, that was question number three. Question number four. Here's another rule about Rashi. When Rashi cites words from the pasuk, as he always does, there's always what we call a dibur hamaschil, the words from the pasuk which he cites, upon which he then adds his commentary. Remember we said that Rashi, there's always a question that Rashi is coming to answer. The question or the idea in Rashi is always based on those words which he cites. Which words does Rashi cite over here? He cites the words, V'ata tetzave zach, and you shall command pure. Okay, we understand that Rashi is addressing the word pure. Why does Rashi add in the words, and you shall command? What does that add to what Rashi is saying over here? So that was question number four. Okay, so with that, we will suffice with those four questions. Let's recap. What are the four questions? Number one, what's the question that Rashi is coming to address? Number two, Rashi says without sediment. What's that coming? Why is that a chiddush? Why is that something that seems to be obvious? Question number three, the proof that Rashi brings from Menachos doesn't seem to be a proof. Question number four, why does Rashi include in the citation and the words that he cites from the pasuk, why does he include the words Va'ata Tetzava? So the Rebbe explains, and remember we always said that the Rebbe will show us that Rashi is coming, once we understand that Rashi is speaking about something else or addressing something else entirely, everything falls into place. There's a question in the pasuk which Rashi is addressing. And that question is as follows. If you look in the words, and it'll be easier if you look in the Hebrew over here in text 1a. Again, it says, V'yikhu elecha, Hashem tells Moshe, command the Jewish people, they should take to you, Shemen Zayis Zoch Kossis. There are four words here. Shemen Zayis Zoch Kossis, which means Shemen is oil, and the oil comes from a Zayis, which is an olive. No canola oil for the menorah. And then Zach, the oil has to be pure, and kossis, it has to be crushed. Now, the word kossis, which is the last word, which is crushed, is that referring to the oil or to the olive? When we say shemen zayis, the olive of the oil, and then we say it has to be crushed, are we talking about the olive? We're talking about the oil. Obviously, we're talking about the olive. Oil isn't crushed. The olive is crushed. The word before then, zach, the word pure, is that talking about the oil or is that talking about the olive? If you say that it's talking about the oil, then we have something strange. Then what we have over here is we're saying it's the oil of an olive, which is pure, and the word pure is referring to the oil, and crushed is referring back to the olive. And that doesn't go very well. You're saying oil of an olive that's crushed and that's pure. But again, then you have word number three is referring to word number one, and word number four is referring back to word number two. What should it have said? It should have said, shemen zayis kossis zach, which would mean oil, which comes from a zayis kossis, which comes from a crushed olive, and which is zach, which is pure. So there's something wrong with the syntax of the pasuk over here. There's another very famous biblical commentator, the Evan Ezra, Rabbi Avram Evan Ezra, who also explains the pasuk always according to pshat, and therefore he says, because of this issue, he argues that the word zach, the word pure, is not referring to the oil, but is referring to the olive. The olive has to be pure, in which case it makes sense. Shemen, we have the oil of the zayis zach, of a pure olive. Kossis, and how is the oil extracted? Through crushing. Let's look at the Evan Ezra inside. Text. The Evan Ezra says, it is customary in olive-growing locales to choose the purest olives, meaning the olives that have not partially spoiled or have been partially eaten by wildlife. From those olives, oil is produced that is used in the food of the royalty. This is why the word zach, pure, is mentioned before the word kossis, crushed. Again, because here we have shemen, it is the oil of zayis zach, of a pure olive, which is then, and that olive, and that oil is zach, and that olive is crushed. So the Evan Ezra make a strong argument that the word pure is not referring to the oil, but it's referring to the olive. What does it mean that the olive is pure? So if you've ever gone fruit picking, you know that if you pick the fruit, sometimes you have a fruit that's a little spoiled. Sometimes you have a fruit that's partially eaten by some animals or by the birds. You're saying that the pure means that is used for the menorah has to be extracted from an olive which is pure, but not that the oil itself has to be pure. Rashi obviously disagrees, and that's what Rashi is saying. No, Rashi is saying that when the pasuk says zach, when the pasuk says pure is referring to the oil, not to the olive. So how does that work in the syntax? So according to Rashi, it's a little of a stretch, but Rashi would argue that we have to read it like this. Shemen, the pasuk says, it has to be oil. And this oil has to have two conditions. Number one, it has to be zayis. It has to be the oil of an olive. Number two, this oil has to be zach. It has to be pure. And how is this oil extracted? Through kossis, through crushing. So the larger issue we have over here is that we have here a machlekes, an argument between Rashi and the Evan Ezra. Evan Ezra says that the oil means pure. And Rashi says, Evan Ezra says that the purity is referring to the olive. And Rashi says the purity is referring to the oil. And by the way, now we understand, we already have the answer to our first two questions. We want to know, what is the question? The question is the pure, remember we asked, what is Rashi even addressing over here? And the answer is, well, Rashi is addressing this ambiguity. Is the purity referring to the oil, as Evan Ezra claims, or is the purity referring to the oil? Sorry, is the impurity referring to the olive, as Evan Ezra says, or is it referring to the oil? And Rashi sides with the side that the purity is referring to the oil. And what does it mean that that is pure? Is that it has no sediment. And that's what, when Rashi says that, we know we're talking here about the oil, because olives don't have sediment, oils have sediment. So again, two understandings over here. But how does Rashi know this? Maybe the purity taka is referring to the olive. What's machriach Rashi? What compels Rashi to say that the purity is a reference to the oil? Aha. Here's where we have, remember, Rashi cites the words va'ata tetzave, and you shall command. Who is the you? The you is Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is in the desert. In the desert, there are no olives. So from where are the Jewish people? And Hashem tells Moshe, you command the Jewish people that they should take olive oil for the menorah. Obviously, the Jewish people had brought along with them olive oil from Mitzrayim, when they went out of Mitzrayim. Olive oil was a commodity back in the day. And they had oil with them, which could be used. But because they were using oil which they had, and not oil which they actually, and not oil from our olives which they were harvesting, there was no way for the Yidden to be able to select the olives to make sure that the olives are pure. So it must be, therefore, that when the pasuk says pure, it's a reference to the oil. In other words, Moshe is going to the Jews and saying, go through your oil, find the pure oil, and that is the oil that is going to be used for the kindling of the menorah. So the words va'ata tetzava, if this was, again, if this was just a commandment in the Torah, you could say the commandment in the Torah is a reference to when the Jewish people went into Eretz Yisrael. But because here the pasuk says va'ata tetzava, Hashem says, Moshe, you have to command, obviously then the word zoch, the word pure, can't be a reference to the olive, but rather it has to be a reference to the oil. And that's why Rashi doesn't want to learn like the Evan Ezra. But what if you want to argue and say, one second, but maybe Moshe Rabbeinu was telling the Jewish people, commanding them what they should do when they enter Eretz Yisrael. So if we move to text 3, the Rebbe brings down from a Rashi later on in Parshas Tzav, where Rashi says, Ein Tzav Ela Lashon Zirus Miyad Ula Deiris. The expression Tzav, and Tzav and Tetzav is the same idea, always denotes urging to promptly and meticulously fulfill a particular commandment for the present and also for future generations, for the present. So think about that for a moment. Rashi could have said, V'ata Zoch. Why did he have to add in the word Tetzava? V'ata you, Moshe. And then, why do you, and then Zoch, pure, which is the two sides of what compels him not to learn according to the Evan Ezra. The word Tetzava. So Rashi says, because we have here the word tetzava, it means that Moshe was telling the Jewish people what to do immediately. And since they were in the desert, and in the desert there were no olive trees over there. So obviously they were using olives which were harvested earlier. And therefore we have to say that the pure is referring to the oil and not to the olive. That leaves us with only one loose thread that we have to tie together. And that is Rashi brings down, if you remember, that he says, if you look back again in text 1b, as we learned in Menachos, he allows it to ripen at the top of the olive trees, etc. What is Rashi saying with that? Why does he bring that down? And how does that prove anything? So again, for those of you who are familiar a little with fruit picking, and I actually am, where I grew up, there was in the backyard, there were a bunch of fruit trees. There's an apple tree, and there was a cherry tree, and a pear tree. And you always knew that the fruit on the very top of the tree, you didn't want those because those were the ones that were most eaten by the birds. So the ones in the middle were the ones that you were actually looking for. So Rashi is saying like this, look at the Gemara. The Gemara says that the fruit on the top were the ones that were selected. Now, if you're looking for the ripest olives, which therefore will give off the least sediment, that's what you're looking for. But if you're looking for olives that were not eaten by birds, you don't go for the top, you go for the middle of the tree. So if we're going to follow the opinion of the Evan Ezra that we're looking for olives that are pure and have not been eaten, then you'd have to pick from the middle of the tree. So Rashi is saying the fact that the Mishnah tells us that we pick from the top of the tree tells us we're not worried about the purity of the olive. We're only worried that the fruit should be the most ripe, and we're worried about the purity of the oil, not the purity of the olive. So to conclude, we have already, remember, we asked 4 questions on Rashi. We've answered them all. Question number 1, we asked, what was the question? And the question is, the ambiguity which Rashi is coming to address is, when the pasuk says zach, when the pasuk says pure, is it referring to the olive or to the oil? And Rashi says it's the oil. Question number 2, what's the chiddush that zach means without sediment? Again, by Rashi saying, belishmar, without sediment, that Rashi's clarifying and making sure that we understand that we're talking about the purity of the oil. Question number 3, what is the proof from the Gemara where it says we allow it to ripen at the top of the olive tree? We answered that also by explaining the top of the olive tree is where the olives are ripest, and you get the best oil, not necessarily the best olive. Why? And question number four, why does Rashi include Va'ata Tetzava in the original citation? And the answer is because Rashi's proof that we're told that it means the purity of the oil as opposed to the purity of the olive is from those words, from the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu had to command it to the Jewish people in the desert. So here's an instance. Again, we have multiple questions, and if you were to learn the Sicha inside, you'll see the Rebbe asks some more questions also. But with this one idea, the understanding of what's really Rashi trying to accomplish here, is trying to explain whether the word Zach is referring to the oil or to the olive, all the questions fall away. What sort of halacha emerges from this Rashi? Remember, we said that one of the ideas is that every single that the Rashi has dvarim uflaim, these wondrous ideas, including halacha. So the Rebbe points to a Rambam, if you look in text 4, and actually, interestingly, this Rambam is talking about the oils. The Rambam says that there are 9 different levels of oil. And so for example, so for the menorah, only 3 of the levels are kosher. But for menaches, you know, every mincha came with oil also. The flour offerings or the bread offerings came with oil. So all the oils were kosher. So the Rambam says, if all of them are kosher, why is it necessary for us to know all 9 levels? They're all kosher. So the Rambam says, it's important for us to know the 9 levels because when we're doing a mitzvah, we always have to strive to do it the best possible way. So even though all 9 are kosher, if I go to the store and there's level 3 oil and level 7 oil, even though they're both kosher, I have to buy the level 3 oil because a mitzvah always has to be done with the best of what we have. And the Rambam continues. Text 4. It is written in the Torah, and Hevel brought from his chosen flocks and from the superior ones, and Hashem turned to Hevel and his offerings. We're going to contrast that to Cain, who he did not make sure to bring from the best of what he had for an offering, and that's why he was rejected by Hashem. The Rambam continues, the same applies to everything given for the sake of Hashem, who is good. It should be of the most attractive and highest quality. If one builds a house of prayer, it should be more attractive than his own dwelling. If he feeds a hungry person, he should feed him from the best and most tasty food of his table. This itself is an important understanding, that when we're giving food to a poor person, we're giving it to Hashem. And therefore, if we recognize that when we're giving something to a poor person, we're not just being kind to a poor person, we're actually giving something to Hashem, we give him from the best. If he clothes one who is naked, he should clothe him with his attractive garments. Yeah, we don't go to the Salvation Army and give our leftover clothing. When we give clothing to the poor, we give from the best of our garments. If he consecrates something, if someone makes something hektish, he should consecrate the best of his possession. And so it is said, in Hebrew the words is, kol chelev la Hashem, which means all of the superior qualities should be given to Hashem. So we have to give something which is always, whenever we're giving something to Hashem, it has to be of superior quality. So the Rebbe asks a question, a halachic question. How about when I am preparing that which I am going to give to Hashem? At that point also, do I have to take that which is of best quality? Let's imagine that it's not going to impact the final product. So for example, let's say, in the olden times, I want to give a suit to a poor person. So I have to go buy wool and give it to a tailor to make a suit. Now, when I'm buying the wool, do I have to make sure that wool is premium quality wool and of the best possible? If the end result, again, if the final suit is not going to make a difference, the final suit, obviously, you have to try to give the best possible. But in the hachana for a mitzvah, the preparation for a mitzvah, is the chiyuv, the obligation to give to Hashem from the best of what we have, does that apply also at the time of the hachana? Or only at the time of the nesina, only at the time when we give it? So the Rebbe says, this is a difference in opinion between the Evin Ezra and Rashi. The Evin Ezra is of the opinion that the olives have to be pure. Even though it doesn't make a difference, the final product doesn't make a difference, the oil will be of the same quality. If I know that this olive is going to be used for the menorah, I have to make sure the olive already is of the highest quality possible. It's not enough that which I'm actually giving to Hashem, the oil is the highest quality, the olive has to be of the highest quality. Whereas Rashi will say, no, the olive, it doesn't make a difference what the olive is, as long as the oil is of high quality. In other words, as long as that which you're giving is of highest quality, in the preparation process, it's not important to make sure the chiyuv, the obligation of kol chelev la Hashem, of ensuring that everything that we give for Hashem is of the best, that doesn't apply over there. And this is the Rebbe's style. I mean, let's be honest, all of us here, we can learn that Rashi 100 times. We would never extract that halacha from there. But the Rebbe was able to look into and find in the subtlety of Rashi tremendous halachic differences between Rashi and the other commentators and different chidushim in Rashi, the way Rashi would understand halacha. And that leads us now to the final part of our lesson, which is, if you remember, we said that Rashi also, the Rebbe always spoke about how Rashi has what's called Yena Shel Torah, the secrets of Torah in it. What are the secrets of Torah that are included in this Rashi? And remember also what we said, to understand the halacha and to understand the Kabbalah of the Rashi, we first have to really understand the Rashi well. So we first have to understand what Rashi is trying to say, which we said earlier, which is that Rashi is trying to draw the distinction between the purity of the olive and the purity of the oil. Then we can draw out from there the halacha. And also the same is true regarding the secrets of the Torah in there. The olive is an interesting fruit. If we look in text 5, it's a Gemara in Hirius, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan said, just as olives cause one to forget the study of 70 years, so too olive oil restores study that one has forgotten for 70 years. So olives are what we are known as kasha l'shikha, someone who eats olives regularly that causes someone to forget, and you can forget something which has been in your mind for 70 years. Olives can make you forget. But olive oil restores something that you have forgotten for 70 years. What is the difference between olives and olive oil in this regard? Olives are bitter. You know, we have in Parshas Noach, so when the dove comes back to the Teva, and it has Alei Zayis Taraf Befiah, it has the leaf of an olive tree in its mouth. And Chazal say on that the message that the dove was saying is, I want to go free. I don't want to be in the Teva anymore. I'd rather that my food be as bitter as an olive, but at least I should be able to earn it on my own, rather than having to rely on others, as in Noach, for its sustenance. So olive is bitter. And that represents the idea of klipa, the idea of the forces of unholiness. And because an olive represents this idea of klipa, that's why it causes to forget, for reasons we're not going to go into right now. But klipa is associated with forgetfulness. As we say, in the High Holiday Prayers, Ein shikha lefnei kisei kvedecha. There is no, that in Kedusha, there is no forgetfulness. But why did Hashem put unholiness in this world? Why did he put klipa in this world? Because he wants us to squeeze it. And when we squeeze it, what do we get? The holiness comes out from inside. After all, what is klipa? Klipa is a shell. And klipa contains within it the powers of holiness. When you squeeze the klipa, when you squeeze the unholiness, what emerges is the olive oil, which is holiness. And that's why, although the olive is considered to be something which is negative and causes you to forget, but the olive oil which emerges from there is the kedusha, which we have when we squeeze the olive oil. We take the world, which the world is in general is klipa, it covers up and it conceals godliness, but when we actually are able to squeeze things and use it properly, what emerges is holiness. What's interesting, however, is that if we look in Chassidus and other places in Chassidus, the Samach Tzedek writes about it, there's a different explanation given of what an olive is. Olive oil, as we mentioned, is Kedusha. Olive oil is holy. In fact, oil, you know from the story of Hanukkah, oil represents the idea of Chachma, which is the highest level of holiness in creation, is the level of Chachma. The olive is the source of the oil, which means it's even higher than that. And in the words of Chassidus, that is known as Keser. Keser is the level of godliness, which is even higher than Chachma, which is completely above and beyond any possibility of revelation here in this world due to its loftiness and its transcendence. You want to know why the olive is bitter? Because we know that if olive oil represents light, and olive oil is the source of light, there is a level which is higher than light, and that is darkness. We say Yoshes Choshech Sisrei, which means that God resides in darkness. Yoshev B'Seser Elyon, God resides in concealment, because the ultimate greatest levels of godliness are completely hidden from us. They are not light, they are darkness to us. So where does the olive oil emerge from? The olive oil emerges from a level which is even higher than the olive oil. If olive oil, again, is a reference to Chochmah, where does the olive oil emerge from? It emerges from Keser, which is even higher than that. And why is it bitter? Because it's darkness. But why is it dark? It's darkness not because it's unholy, but because it is a level which is completely above and beyond revelations in creation. Revelation in creation. And these are both true. In other words, on the one hand, olives as they enter this world in a revealed form are klipa, but olives in its source is keser, which is the highest level of holiness. So here we have the disagreement between the Ibn Ezra and Rashi. So again, we see over here, it seems to us that the Ibn Ezra and Rashi are arguing over, you know, the simple understanding of the pasuk. Is purity referring to the oil? Is it referring to the olives? And they are. But the Ibn Ezra and Rashi, these great people, whatever they're arguing about is also about the highest and deepest of things. The Ibn Ezra is saying, when we look at an olive, and that's, as Ibn Ezra says, I'm looking at things simply, it's klipa. We have to squeeze it to get the kedusha out of it, but because it's klipa, we have to be very careful with the olive. We have to make sure that the olive is pure, because some klipa can't be elevated. You know, there's a certain genre of klipa which can't be elevated. We have to make sure the olive is pure, and only if the olive is pure, if the klipa is not overly contaminated, then we can squeeze it and get holiness out of it. But Rashi has a deeper understanding, because Rashi has the deepest secrets of the Torah. And Rashi says, no, this olive is a reference to keser. And therefore, we don't have to worry about the purity of the olive. You know what you have to worry about? You have to worry about the purity of the oil that comes from the olive. Because the olive oil, even though taka, it's holy, it's chachma, but ultimately chachma is already a level of godliness which manifests in this world. And once something manifests in this world, you have to be careful to make sure that it doesn't get contaminated in any which way. But the olive itself, that is above and beyond contamination, don't worry about the olive. All you have to worry about is the olive oil that emerges. So here we see the unity in the Rebbe's Torah, which is so beautiful. Both in the realm of the Pshat of Rashi itself, where the Rebbe will take multiple questions and give one idea, and the questions slowly fall away, and also the unity in all of Torah, how we have a simple Rashi, and how the Rebbe goes and plumbs its depths, and finds the halacha in it, and finds the Kabbalah and the Chassidus in it. And again, this is only one example of something which the Rebbe did Shabbos after Shabbos after Shabbos for 25 years, and we are the lucky recipients of this, and we still continue learning them, and enjoying them, and connecting to the Rebbe through studying these